Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host, Meghna Chakrabarty, is out today. And now, a conversation with Massachusetts Interim Senator William Moe Cowan. Governor Deval Patrick surprised many when he picked Cowan, one of his top aides, to serve as Interim Senator for Massachusetts after John Kerry took over as Secretary of State. Moe Cowan grew up in North Carolina, graduated from Duke University and Northeastern University Law School. He was a partner in the Boston law firm Mintz Levin before going to work for Patrick in 2009. After Patrick appointed him to the Senate, Cowan said he'd be retiring from politics after the special Senate election on June 25th, so his would be as short a political career as one could have. That means we better talk to him while we can. And Senator Moe Cowan, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Well, your appointment took many people by surprise. I'm wondering if it took you by surprise.
Yes, to say that I did not grow up thinking that I was going to be in the United States Senate is an understatement. So it was a surprise that from among what I'm sure was a robust and dynamic group of candidates, the governor selected me, but a pleasant surprise nonetheless. And further consideration, perhaps it shouldn't have been a surprise in the sense that I worked very closely with the governor and his administration in that regard. I know the issues of Massachusetts as well as anyone, certainly from that perch, and those are the same issues I came down to Washington, D.C. to work on.
And was it an immediate yes, or did you have to say, whoa, Governor, I got to think about this?
Well, you know, it's one of those conversations you don't expect to find yourself in. And so I've learned a long time ago, Anthony, that when you have decisions of this magnitude and when you're married, you don't say anything immediately until you talk to your significant other.
Right. Okay. And so I gather the significant other, your significant other, had something to say about it. And it must have been positive because there you are in Washington.
Indeed. Here I am. Here I am. And I'm happy to have the chance to serve the people of Massachusetts.
Let me ask you a little bit about your predecessor. I'm wondering if John Kerry gave you any advice before you took over his seat.
You know, I had a very nice conversation with Secretary Kerry after the appointment, and he gave me some great advice, both professionally and personally. And the professional advice that I'll share, and I think it's worthy of your listeners knowing, is sort of to come down to Washington, D.C., put your head down and work hard, and spend time learning the ways of the Senate to become an effective member of the body. Secretary Kerry actually did me a tremendous favor as well, because he left me with Senator Kerry's outstanding and experienced staff, who have enabled me to hit the ground running and to keep moving forward on the issues that the team had been working on before this transition so that the constituent services haven't faltered and the issues continue to be addressed.
Well, let me ask you about that, because when you were first appointed by the governor, there were some who said you weren't the best pick because you lacked policymaking experience. You talked about the need to sort of hit the ground running.
Yes.
Respond to that. I mean, maybe that early criticism. Are you equipped to handle that sort of dirty business of wheeling and dealing in Washington?
Well, as I said, you know, I come down to Washington, D.C. with the benefit of knowing the issues at the state level incredibly well, and those are the issues that, you know, I've been working on down here. Obviously, there's a broader base of issues here. And, you know, I'll leave it to others to ultimately decide how well I've spent my time here, but I come down here with tremendous confidence that I am capable and willing and able to do the work that's required.
So when it comes to the Washington Beltway, being inside the Beltway, you're far from the political insider. And sometimes as a relative outsider, you can get an interesting perspective. And I'm just wondering what has surprised you or impressed you the most about this job.
Well, what has impressed me the most is something I tell people all the time is how warm and welcoming every person in the Senate has been, regardless of political ideology or affiliation. And so to a person, each member of the Senate that I've engaged with has been great and supportive with me and has indicated a desire to make sure that I have a good and successful tenure here. It also suggests to me, based on my own experiences working back up in the Commonwealth, that if you have that foundation of respect and admiration among the membership, we should be able to do much more in a bipartisan fashion than we have been able to do thus far. And so in that respect, on some level, I'm actually flummoxed, and if not altogether disappointed, that we're not doing more on a bipartisan basis.
There's an awful lot of concern around the country right now about paralysis, the hyperpartisanship that dominates the House and the Senate. I'm just wondering, as you know, you're serving in what has been called the world's greatest deliberative body. It doesn't seem to be so these days. What's your view on what ails the Senate and how it can be repaired?
Well, you know, I'm relatively new here, and so I don't profess to be an expert in the ways and the workings of the Senate, but I've worked in government at the state level before, and I did so, I think, successfully in a successful administration, in part because Governor Patrick and his senior leadership recognized that you don't have to agree on everything to get some things done. And again, I think we would be wise down here in the Congress to remember that. It is not at all unusual to hear some of my colleagues talk about the days of yore when, you know, Senator Kennedy and others were in the Senate, and the willingness at that time to work across the aisle, notwithstanding the differences. We need to remember that, get back to that. I am encouraged by many of the conversations I've been party to, both in the Democratic caucus and with members of the Republican caucus. There's a foundation there that we can build upon to get ourselves out of this gridlock and move the country forward. As Governor Patrick likes to say, you have to govern like you're not afraid to lose. You got to govern in a principled fashion and bring that to the job. That's what we've got to do down here.
You know, speaking of governing like you're not afraid to lose the job, it occurs to me that you're sort of in a unique position there. And there's two ways you could look at your position. On the one hand, you could say, well, you're just a temporary appointee, a seat warmer. On the other hand, you still have this huge responsibility and maybe a big opportunity to rise above the politics and speak your mind because you don't have to worry about being reelected.
Well, those who know me and know me well know that I'm not afraid to speak my mind, but, you know, there are ways to have conversations, and you've got to know your audience and choose your method strategically. And that's what I do down here. That's what I've done all along in my career, and I will continue in that regard. You know, I am the interim senator. Everyone knows that I have a short shelf life, and, you know, I want to make good use of that. So whether some choose to think of me because of my short tenure as someone who won't have that much influence, I think that's perhaps selling me short, or perhaps some think of me as the guy with nothing to lose because he knows he's going to be out of here in a few months. I think that's perhaps overstating it.
I want to ask you a little bit, if I could, Senator Cowan, about your background. When you were appointed, you paid tribute to your mother, Cynthia Cowan, who grew up in the segregated South, but who always told you, you said, that if you worked hard and treated people with respect, anything could happen. So put this temporary appointment in perspective of that idea, of that principle that your mother laid out.
I am living proof of the lessons she taught me in that regard all along, that if you treated folks well and you worked hard in this country, in this time and any time yet to come, you could be anything you wanted to be, and you could achieve anything you hoped to. People have asked me to reflect upon my time here and what is my most favorite memory to date, and for me it's quite simple. It's certainly the day I was sworn in the Senate chamber, and I was blessed and honored to have scores of friends and family from all over the country who came to fill the chamber gallery to support me, including my mother and my two sisters. And one of the most precious memories from that day include my son shaking the hand of the vice president, but it was also the vice president leaning over, speaking softly to my mother, who was in a wheelchair because she had just had a knee replacement, and the look in my mother's eyes, recognizing that while this indeed was a special day for me, it was more special for her because everything she had ever taught me was playing out in real time right there on the Senate floor. And if there's anything I was proud of, I was proud of the fact that my mother once again was proven correct, and that the vice president had a chance to meet one of the most outstanding people I've ever known in my life, my mom.
Well, it's a great memory that you recall from the day you were sworn in. Senator Cowan, you're the state's second African-American senator. Republican Edward Brooks served from 67 to 79. And at the moment, you're one of just two African-Americans in the Senate. Tim Scott from South Carolina is also a temporary appointee. What's your view on why the Senate is so slow, I guess, to reflect the diversity of the full diversity of the American people?
Well, as you said, it's one of the world's most deliberative bodies, I suppose. But yeah. Listen, I'm proud that by virtue of this appointment, I've joined a short but impressive list of African Americans who served in the Senate. And I'm proud to serve with Senator Scott, who I've spent some time getting to know. And while we probably spend our times on opposite sides of the political spectrum, we've already had conversations to try to figure out whether there's common ground and things that we can work on together. And that's what this really should be about. you know, as I reflect on that aspect of this appointment and why I'm only the eighth person in the history of the United States, a person, African-American, I should say, to serve in the United States Senate, you know, I think it's a good reminder that while I'm only number eight, there have been eight, and I hope someday in the not-too-distant future there'll be 18 or 28 or whatever the number may be, but we have to change that and to make that a reality. We have to make sure more and more young people of all diverse experiences, cultures, and backgrounds take an interest in public life and public service. One of my favorite activities thus far down here are meeting with children from a variety of schools who from Massachusetts who come and visit and engage them in conversation, and I always try to take an opportunity to talk to them about getting engaged in public life, even at a relatively young age, because that is the beginning of the pathway to an opportunity like this, and we have to encourage that.
I know you've got to go. I'm just going to ask you one more question. I can't let this one go, and that is, you know, we mentioned at the top that after your appointment you said yours would be a very short Senate career. Has being in Washington, D.C. affirmed that decision, or have you maybe caught the bug? Maybe you want to rethink that decision not to pursue a career down there.
Well, I remain fully inoculated against Potomac fever. I am enjoying my time here, and I'm adjusting to the way of life and the way business is done here. But, you know, listen, come the evening of June 25th, the people will decide for themselves who should follow my term here, and I'm grateful that they will. I have no desire or designs on running for public office. I just hope that while I have the time I have here, I'm able to do some good for the people back home.
All right. Well, Mo Cowan, thanks so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
All right, Anthony. Be well.
Same to you. That's William Mo Cowan, the interim senator from Massachusetts. And stay with us. Coming up, highlights from yesterday's big day in Southie. Also, an appreciation of gray corned beef boiled with cabbage. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.